Many of our communities grew up around natural resources. If they were trees or acres of decent farmland nearby, the resources tended to fuel the growth. The timber industry and agriculture still hang on in the region, but are less important to the overall economy generally. There are constant efforts to bring in industries that employ bunches of people at good wages, and if the industries are relatively clean and environment friendly, so much the better. In the greater Medford area, there are several agencies and entities dedicated to bringing in high, or at least higher, tech businesses. And to give us an overview of all those efforts going on and how those pieces of the puzzle fit together, we have two guests with us in the studio. Heather Stafford is the Executive Director at Sustainable Valley Technology Group. Heather, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Mark Von Holly is here as well. He has a number of titles. He is a board member at Sustainable Valley, a board member at SoReady, Southern Oregon Regional Economic Development, Inc. He is the CEO of Sustainable Solutions Group and the Director of Business Development at R.A. Murphy Construction Company. Mark Von Holly, it would take several pages, I guess, to get your full resume in here, wouldn't it?
I think I have ADD on steroids sometimes. A lot going on.
All right.
Good morning.
So you both have a fairly deep backgrounds in the tech business. Please lay those backgrounds out. Let's start with you, Mark, because you got the long resume.
Sure, yeah. Well, a few years ago, I realized, and I relocated my family up here from the Silicon Valley about 11 years ago, and realized that there's the first time in history that the word Silicon Valley ever left somebody's lips. And if it would have been me, I would have thought, holy cow, what a thing to say, Silicon Valley. What a silly, but it became, you know, very iconic in the cradle of technology that changed the world we live in. We see the world's going through this paradigm shift with regard to sustainability. It's the environmental, technologic, social, economic reality of our times. And I realized there had not been a community yet to establish the idea of a sustainable valley. And looked around and I thought, you know what, we've got so many amazing things happening in Southern Oregon. Oregon itself has got an internationally recognized sustainable profile, and it's ours for the taking. So we started Sustainable Valley with the mission of creating a business accelerator to reverse the rate of failure of business in our community, focusing on those businesses that have got a hockey stick growth potential to create family wage jobs and sustainable technologies.
And you are the co-founder of Sustainable Valley, is that right?
That is correct, with Jessica Gomez. We founded it about 4 years ago.
All right. So, and give us a little background on you, Heather Stafford, and the efforts you've made to bring in high-tech business.
Well, it's interesting. I'm also from the Silicon Valley. The Bay Area in the late 90s was doing media and video and digital production for a lot of Fortune 500 companies. And so working with that, I think that's where I got the love for the entrepreneurial spirit, is that, you know, seeing all those little paper.com millionaires in the grassy knoll down in south of Market in San Francisco, you know, living in that world. It's sort of in my blood. So coming here and finding out about this opportunity that there really is a very rich culture of innovation growing here in Southern Oregon, and loving to grow things and work with entrepreneurs and help them realize their fullest potential, raising money, getting mentorship. We also have a lot of wonderful brain power in the region, and that certainly helps when you're starting to develop early stage businesses to become successful, to get them good mentorship and perfect money for the stage that they're at.
You are or were involved with something else called Grow Oregon, weren't you?
Yeah, Grow Oregon was a program with the Small Business Development Center. It was a statewide program, and the mission of which was to work with traded sector companies that were successful, that had three quarters at least of sustainable growth and success, and one to 10 million in revenue and 10 to 99 employees. So that pocket of already successful mid-sized businesses, and how can we help them become more successful? So building on our strengths instead of trying to sort of patch our weaknesses was the philosophy. So I did advanced market research for them for about a year and a half, and it was a great experience to plug into to what innovation's happening in the state and how you can really do targeted business mentorship and how that can change and help our already successful businesses.
From some things we read, it seems like you might still be something like the albino deer in the herd here. I mean, are women a little less common in high-tech business and in high-tech business development?
As engineers, I think the statistic is about 10%, so it's pretty low. Mm-hmm. So this is the reason that Sustainable Valley has started to get into STEM education quite a bit, is mentoring that pipeline of engineers and innovation quite earlier, while students still have a chance to control their trajectory in college or become entrepreneurs and get mentorship as early as possible. So we feel like that's very important. As far as entrepreneurs, though, we're not so much less anymore. I think the last statistic at the Southern Oregon Angel Conference was something like 47% women are competing, you know, statewide. So you know, the wider it opens up and the more creative that women get, you know, this is a wonderful sort of glass ceiling breaker, actually, entrepreneurship is. because you have an idea, you get some mentorship and some money, and off you go. You know, there's no more climbing the corporate ladder. You know, that sort of world is ending. So the support system is there for everyone to succeed. You know, it's really about the idea and the entrepreneur.
Martin von Holly, I guess this goes to you because you are the co-founder of a Sustainable Valley Technology Group. What does SVTG do that SoReady doesn't, since you're on the boards of both?
Yeah, Sustainable Valley, you know, has got – we have a business accelerator for one. And so, you know, tech startups have about a 90% failure rate. You know,
90%? Really?
About a 90% failure rate. So, you know, it doesn't –
Is that
really,
higher than retail, for example?
Across the board, I think that most businesses – you know, about 60% of businesses, according to the SBA, don't make it to their third year. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of keeps on dropping off from there. But tech startups are 90% failure rate. So, you know, it sounds kind of perverse, but we almost need to embrace a culture of failure here. Because if you look at the Silicon Valley, it's the 19th largest economy in the world. California is the 8th largest economy in the world. And if 90% of the tech startups are failing in Silicon Valley, but it's still the 19th largest economy in the world, you know, it all speaks for itself. So, but what I wanted to do is, you know, university studies show that 87% of the businesses that will go through a 3-year accelerator program will succeed, and 84% of those will stay in the communities where they're accelerated. So that's a big focus of Sustainable Valley Technology Group is business acceleration.
All right, we'll get a little more into what business acceleration is and how the whole process works. And there's so many moving parts here, it seems like, in bringing technology business to the Rogue Valley, or any valley for that matter. We'll come back and talk more with Mark von Holly and Heather Stafford, and take your phone calls and emails when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We are talking about high-tech business and how to attract it and how to retain it, how to get it to grow in the first place in a place like the Rogue Valley, and how to get it to stick around long enough to be a factor, to bring in good jobs in a place like the Rogue Valley. We're obviously talking about people from the Rogue Valley about this. Heather Stafford is the Executive Director at Sustainable Valley Technology Group. Mark von Holly wears 5 or 6 hats by some count. He is on the board of the Sustainable Valley Technology Group and a co-founder on the board of SoReady. He's the CEO of Sustainable Solutions Group and the Director of Business Development for R.A. Murphy Construction, working on a technology park. We'll talk about that a little later in the program. You can join us on the exchange as we talk about the whole process of bringing high-tech industry in, how to nurture it, how to make it grow. Our phone number is here, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. We have done the sprinkling part of the conversation, where we sprinkle terms like business accelerator and angel investor and stuff like that. So let's begin to explore some of these. Sustainable Valley Technology Group has a business accelerator. What is a business accelerator, Heather Stafford?
Well, a business accelerator is something that provides mentorship and money. Ours is particularly focused on early stage businesses. And that's not to say that they're not already in existence, but what we're looking for are companies that have traded sector potential and they're in a fundraising cycle, or they're looking to grow rapidly. Many times in that scenario, they need help. They need mentorship. You have companies that may have one founder, maybe two. They certainly don't have an executive team. They don't have a CFO or a CMO or access to lawyers, access to financial planners, an HR department. They don't have any of these things. And so the magic of an accelerator is that they can join. Ours, it happens to be 12 weeks, which is kind of a good number as well. It's an intensive mentoring program, and then they get to the point where they're able to have an investor packet. They're really able to speak about their business very eloquently. They're able to really understand the inner workings of how they're going to grow. They get strategy. They get all this incredible mentorship that they wouldn't normally get on their own.
It's just diamond polishing, it sounds like.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, so they really get a chance to sparkle a little better than they were doing otherwise. You mentioned some of those terms I understood, CFO, Chief Financial Officer, CMO?
Marketing.
Okay.
Yeah, marketing, HR, all those things, you know, financials. We're expecting our entrepreneurs to be able to be all things to all people, be wonderful inventors, be wonderful entrepreneurs, and also be able to market and, you know, do their financials and build a website and, you know, all of these things while they're trying to grow. And the more that we can help support that, the more impact actually in economic development terms we're going to have. Because the SBA found that in 2010, there were 7,500 or so jobs lost in Oregon. And 1 to 4 size businesses, so your micro businesses, your startups, actually in that same period of time created almost 10,000 jobs. So they're not the job losers, right? Even though their rate of failure is very high, they're still overall job creators. And so if you could target tech companies in that space and help them accelerate their extended commercialization time, then you could really make an impact.
So let's define tech companies. I mean, what sorts of things do they have to be doing to be considered within those bounds? Are the bounds kind of fudgy? Can they be doing things that might be an old process with a new bit of machinery or something? Or, I mean, how do you define a tech business?
Well, we say tech business, and that's really our love. I mean, I think we're all kind of in love with new and emerging technologies. But the truth is that we live in a rural region, and we have to be responsive to what industries are here and what kind of entrepreneurs we're seeing. So, for instance, 3 of our 5 accelerator companies in the winter were food businesses. One was a farmstead creamery, and 2 were food producers. But the reason that they ended up getting seed money from private investors and being a part of our program was that what they were doing was very innovative, very scalable, very responsive, very important to the community. So we really let our investors decide on our accelerator program. Now, we get our tech fix with our iGrant program, which we could go into potentially more later. But that's very focused on mentoring a company that's got a longer commercialization time. Our winner this year was actually from Massachusetts, from the Boston area. We had 92 inquiries for this program from all over the world, actually, from Russia and Pakistan and mostly East Coast, all over. And what it is our pilot with this is Rogue Valley Micro Devices. Jessica Gomez had this sort of brainchild and said, "Why? I have a little bit of extra capacity. Why don't I donate $150,000 of in-kind services to a new company and see what would happen? We don't have a research institute here. We don't have a really big company like a Nike or an Intel or somebody here. So we're kind of going to have to mentor our own." And what happened was astounding. I mean, 92 inquiries from all over the world. And also that there's also something sort of magical about our geographic location when you talk about tech businesses, because, you know, we're 5 hours or so from the Bay Area, we're 5 hours or so from Portland, and Seattle's not that far off, right on the I-5. So, you know, it's a 45-minute plane ride from either place. And it's a really incredible asset to have those two markets, and we could really maximize a lot of what we're doing.
The iGrant is the inspiration grant?
The inspiration grant.
Okay, yeah, we do want to ask about that later. We'll get further into the details there. So, Mark von Holly, just generally, I mean, you've been in this business for a long time now. Are there lots of cases where people have really good ideas, either good products or good processes or both? They just don't have any particular business sense?
Yeah, exactly. You know what? I think what we're creating is like an economic development ecosystem of sorts, if you will. You know, most entrepreneurs are taking their tomato seeds and they're planting them outside. They don't realize it's January, the elements are working against them, and that, you know, odds are they're not going to make it. There's too many things that blindside them and take them out of the game. As Heather said, they might have a good idea about their particular technology, but how to market it, how to do accounting, all the legal aspects of it, it blindsides them. That's what takes most people out of the game. So really what we're doing is creating like a hydroponic greenhouse of sorts where they can plant those seeds. They've got protection from the adverse, you know, elements, and then they've also got a source of nutrition plugged into each plant through mentors and a program. And, you know, SoReady, some of these things are very complementary. I want to do a shout out to SoReady. Very complementary with what SoReady is doing. Heather's actually, her office is actually co-located. Her office is right next to the executive director.
Valley. Okay, so yeah.
So of SoReady. So it's very complementary. It really should be like feathers on a bird's wing that's going to give our regional economy the lift that it needs to get above the storm that we're still going through here regionally.
All right. Nobody start singing Wind Beneath Your Wings. How established is the tech sector thus far in the Rogue Valley?
You know what? It is absolutely stunning. I feel like Indiana Jones has found the Holy Grail here the past couple of months, because I've been looking for this specific information for a while, and I just found it. It's startling how many high-tech companies are represented by government NACE sector code. There are 277 in our two-county region. Those 200
Jackson Josephine
County, they provide about 2,800 jobs that average $56,000 a year. That's 150% of Jackson County's median wage of about $36,000, which currently has us in the bottom 7% for the lowest wages in the country. So that we've got thousands, we've got hundreds of tech companies here already. They're relatively small. That's good. But they're very diverse. The Milken Institute says we have 20 of 22 sectors of technology here right now. Nine of those are at density levels equivalent to national averages. Seven exceed. So we have a very diverse and strong, it's almost organic, the tech sector that's been growing here because we didn't know about it. We haven't done much to support it.
Let's pull the parts out, though. They just mentioned 2,800 jobs across the two counties.
Yes.
Averaging 56,000 a year.
56,000. There's three companies in Josephine County, for example, that provide 186 jobs. They're a specialty high-tech equipment manufacturer. And those 186 positions pay on average $80,000. Now you look what's going on in Josephine County. They're unfortunately so broke they can't hardly afford to pay attention. You know, it's becoming a vigilante society over there with the shutting down of the sheriff's department, et cetera. They're not shutting it down. I think they've got three deputies on staff.
But really no patrols over the daytime hours.
Yeah. So, but here they have three companies with 186 jobs averaging $80,000. And that's not just the high-tech jobs. That's $80,000 across all of the jobs. So the person answering the phone to the highest techie there, the average wage is $80,000.
What kinds of training do these people have and what kinds of degrees do they possess to be able to earn this kind of money?
I love that question because we've got an untapped reservoir of technically educated young people that right now leave the valley through the brain drain, right? Because I did a study a few years ago. There was 72 kids from Josephine County and 228 from Jackson County going to OIT. 300 kids from this community going to OIT. The majority were getting technical educations and the majority are going somewhere else because of the perception of the lack of opportunity here. So what that resulted in, Jeff, this brain drain is having an adverse impact. State economists are saying that when the birth rate in rural Oregonian communities declines and it's exceeded by the birth rate, that a lot of these communities are going to reach the point of no return. They're not coming back. And that's actually happening right now in Jackson and Josephine County.
Let's pause there and let the listeners know we're talking about the growth of high-tech business in Jackson and Josephine counties with Heather Stafford and Mark Von Holly. Heather Stafford's the executive director at Sustainable Valley Technology Group. Mark is on the board of Sustainable Valley and on So Ready and is the CEO of Sustainable Solutions and works in business development for R.A. Murphy Construction and clearly sleeps 2 hours a night. You can join this discussion about the current state of the economy in the Rogue Valley and how to attract high-tech business to this and any other place for that matter. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. Our Rogue Valley local number, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's an email from Dave in Medford. He says, can anyone explain the seeming conflict of interest between Mark Von Holly and Sustainable Valley's mission? Mark works for a company that is purchasing land for the tech park. He is a major proponent of it, and it seems like Sustainable Valley's only mission is just acting as the real estate firm for the park, all while receiving tax dollars from the state, Jackson, and Josephine counties. Even though they give out grants and funding, it sure feels like Sustainable Valley is more interested in being a landlord than in bringing in technical companies or retaining technical people. Bam.
Bam. Here we go.
Wow.
Yeah, so Sustainable Valley is a 501c3 and started that organization long before I got the idea for the tech park. And so the tech park is not receiving any sort of taxpayer subsidies. And I'm a guy that's all about leverage. I mean, come on. Our wages are bottom 7% for the lowest in the United States of America. We've got 55% of the kids in Medford School District qualifying for food assistance. You know, we've slipped on a list of the top 179 best performing small cities from number 12, 102 places to number 114 and
over
only 10
time.
Years time.
10
years,
years
time,
time. Really?
We're 160 on that list for job growth out of 179. We're 166 for wage growth. Okay, so by any rankings, we're bringing up the rear. But we're number 12 for our five-year high-tech GDP growth. So I was able to have this discussion with a gentleman by the name of Reed Murphy, who's a very successful developer in the Valley, and share all this with him. He asked me a couple of months ago, did I drink your Kool-Aid? And I said, yeah, you did, but it's pretty good, right? We bought 80 acres of state-certified, shovel-ready industrial land. It's the most beautiful, pristine piece of industrial land in this valley that has been sitting vacant since World War II.
This is old Camp White land.
The old Camp White land, but it's the most pristine piece of industrial land in this region. It's been sitting vacant since World War II. And so what I want to do is leverage his faith and goodwill, you know, to make this sort of investment. We've already passed on two companies that could have resulted in about $30 to $40 million worth of work for our company. And the reason was because of the small density of job. One of them was a timber products company that wanted up to 40 acres that was only going to create up to 100 jobs. Okay, the other one was a cardboard manufacturer that wanted up to 40 acres that was only going to create about 300 jobs, half of which were going to be unskilled. Neither one of those is going to stop the brain drain. The kids aren't going to go get an OIT graduation, come back here and work at a timber products company with only 100 jobs. On 8 acres, I can put a tech firm that will have 300 jobs. So that would be 5 times as many jobs as the box factory and 15 times as many jobs as the timber products company. So if we were just in this trying to, you know, work the angles and make a bunch of money, we would have already located those two tenants on this site. and had $40 million of work for our company. That's not what we're doing. Reed is very much a community-minded individual, and he knows the greater good is to be served by developing something this community's never seen, which is a high-tech park.
So you're saying that the Rogue Valley can actually afford to be somewhat picky?
Well, you know what? We've only got a very limited amount of industrial land. So, you know, Oregon has the most restrictive zoning overlay of all 50 states. Okay, I did an inventory recently of our industrial land assets in southern Oregon, and I was just appalled at how little there is. But the reality is it's still sitting there, and it's vacant. And it sits there decade after decade because nobody has a plan to do anything about it. It's kind of like Confucius said, man who stand on mountaintop with mouth wide open, wait long time for a roast duck to drop in. And we sit here in the flyover between the Silicon Valley and the Silicon Forest, hoping that something's going to drop out of the sky. We've got to have a more of a comprehensive plan to triangulate our regional resources and have a strategic plan to start populating these parks, and I think we can do that.
Heather Stafford, I mean, one of the attributes that do make the Rogue Valley attractive to business, you mentioned, and Mark just reiterated again, that we're not that far from either San Francisco and San Jose and Portland on the other side. What are some of the other attributes, particularly in a case like what Mark was just talking about, where there's not a lot of land available?
Yeah, I think in the Rogue Valley, especially, you know, to speak to the private-public education business partnerships, you know, I think the amount of collaboration or what you would call collective impact is pretty impressive here. I mean, I've lived a bunch of places, and it has a sort of magical size where the things that you do here, you can see the impact of your actions. So for entrepreneurs, that's very attractive. So, you know, back to the iGrant a little bit. It's not a cash grant. So, I mean, just to sort of clarify, Sustainable Valley doesn't give cash money in the form of grants. What we do is provide mentoring, and we provide technical assistance, professional development for young companies. So there's no money passes through Sustainable Valley in the form of cash to other companies. So just to clarify that. Also, you know, the iGrant, we have these companies that are coming out of MIT. I mean, they're coming out of the Boston area. They're coming out of, you know, the most amazing tech hubs in the world. And they're very intrigued by Southern Oregon. And the reason being, they're a bit white noise over there. So to be a startup in Boston, imagine being a startup, trying to create some buzz about your product, create some buzz about your technology, and then you come over to Southern Oregon. So we had our two finalists for the iGrant come over to Southern Oregon, and they were on three television stations. They were interviewed by two newspapers. They were on the radio. They met county commissioners. They met, there was the fanfare and the excitement and the buzz about just what they were doing and their ability to talk about that and look at the partnership possibilities with the innovation infrastructure that the state of Oregon has been building for quite some time with Onami, Otrati, Oregon Best, you know, the signature research centers, OSU and PSU. Like the system of innovation here is actually very, very functional, and our strategic location between those two meccas of innovation is also helpful. So here they had the buzz, and it was exciting.
Are there people who, I mean, it's been going on for a long time, obviously, and has been reflected in real estate prices, you know, obviously not since the crash, perhaps, but rebounding from that time. Families moving up from California, not necessarily having jobs up here. So are there people here who are trained for the kinds of businesses you're talking about bringing in, but they aren't working in those fields at the moment?
Yeah, I'll give you there's a stat out there that 25% of the workforce in the Rogue Valley is working below their skill and their education set simply because of the intentional lifestyle choice of choosing to live here. But what we've got this, I call it the equity refugee pipeline, in particular coming out of California. When the economy tanked, our real estate market overcorrected because it was overdependent upon that phenomena. The year that I moved here, in the San Jose Mercury, there's an article that said that the number one least affordable housing market in the United States of America was Medford, Oregon. And it was because of the disparity between our wages and the real estate values.
That include Ashland?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And now that same exact thing is happening because the economy's on the rebound, housing starts are down, equity's up. The house that we sold in Union City for $450,000, now they're selling for $700,000. And so we're at the front edge of the silver tsunami, so we've got this continual inward migration of the equity refugees, but they're primarily retired. They're not having kids, and that's kind of part of the false sense of security we have with regard to the brain drain. In 1980, Medford had two births for every death. Now we're just barely treading water. Josephine County had 1.5 births for every death. Now they're 0.75 births for every death. we're not replacing our younger population because they're leaving the area because of the lack of opportunity.
So you either got to increase the birth rate or increase the in-migration.
Of the people that have children. Because the in-migration right now is causing this continual uptick in our population. So again, we've got a false sense of security, but they're primarily retirees because we're consistently ranked among the top destinations for retirement across the country.
We have an email here from Ethan, no location given. I assume Jacksonville. Ethan writes, we moved our family and small e-commerce biz to the Valley 2 years ago, and one of the main factors was Jacksonville Elementary School. Our children were approaching school age, and Jacksonville has a well-earned reputation. You hear a lot about college curriculum and the like, but K-12 can be even more important. Got to plug the library, too. We're pretty much there every week. So, I mean, there are things that attract people here in the way of infrastructure other than I mean, just it's a good place to live, right?
Mm-hmm. The quality of life we have here, most people don't even allow themselves to dream about when they're living in a big metropolitan market. I know that was the case for me. You just get caught keeping pace with the herd, and if you don't keep pace with the herd, somebody will run over the top and take your spot. So we decided to break from the herd 11 years ago, and there are wonderful amenities this community offers and a quality of life that is very attractive. And quite honestly, as far as business recruitment, those are the kind of people that we want to attract. They don't want to fit in the fabric of our culture.
Much more to talk about attracting and retaining high-tech business. We're focusing on the Rogue Valley with Mark Von Holly and Heather Stafford. You can join this discussion as well. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange with Heather and Mark and your phone calls and emails in a minute 25. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our topic today is high-tech business, how to bring it in, how to nurture it, how to help it grow, how to keep it alive. That's the function of our guests today in the Rogue Valley. Heather Stafford is the Executive Director at the Sustainable Valley Technology Group. Mark Von Holly is a co-founder of Sustainable Valley and a board member. He's also a member of the SoReady Board, that's Southern Oregon Regional Economic Development, Inc. He is the CEO of Sustainable Solutions Group and the Director of Business Development at R.A. Murphy Construction, which, of course, is trying to start a Rogue Valley Technology Park in the White City area. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the process of nurturing high-tech business. 800-838-3760, our phone number anywhere in the listening area. Our Rogue Valley local number, 541-552-6782, and our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Heather Stafford, we were just talking about the attributes that are make the Rogue Valley attractive to business and the fact that there are people who are here and not necessarily doing that kind of work at the moment. What are some of the turnoffs? What are some of the things that that make companies that may be considering a move not decide to locate here?
I think there's a couple things that that we don't have as assets, and I'll say one of those is a research institute. So the struggle is getting people who know hands-on, getting really high-quality engineers, mechanical engineers, chemical engineers, electrical engineers, technicians, people who can do high-level. And those types of people generate high wages as well.
So not having a Stanford or a San Jose State nearby hurts.
Yeah, it's kind of nice to have one of those. Yeah. And we don't. So we have to be a bit creative about how we go about filling that gap. And that actually takes time because there's culture building involved. But starting earlier, and we do have Oregon Tech, which is quite a resource. I mean, they have a 98% placement rate for their engineers.
And a well-kept right secret being in Klamath Falls, that far off the beaten path, yeah.
Yeah, and they're
apologies
in our region.
To folks in Klamath Falls.
And we do have the president of Oregon Tech on our board of directors, just as a point mm-hmm. of reference.
So we're really trying to bridge that gap. You know, as Ron Fox of SoReady would say, we're trying to make that 70 miles into 70, you know, get our 70 miles to 7, and turn that into really a more functional, holistic kind of part of the two-county region and create a tri-county region out of Klamath, Jackson and Josephine County, and use those assets to the best of our ability. But the truth is that we're not there yet. You know, I mean, we're still working on it. We're still culture building. We're still working. And this is why we decided to go earlier. So starting with the third graders, you know, how can we get them hands-on education? How can we get them knowing what assets are here, what industries they could get jobs at? I mean, we're making semiconductors here. We're making MEMS technologies here. We're making heavy-lift helicopters. We have the highest density of heavy-lift helicopters in the world. next to the military.
At Ericsson Aircrane? Well,
and others, right?
Grumman. Others.
Yeah, and you know, we've got Carestream doing really advanced toll coding, making flexible iPad touchscreens and really cool stuff. I mean, and I could go on and on and on about the really cool companies that are here, but the truth is that the students don't know that they're here. So how do we bridge that pipe? How do we create a better pipeline between our K-12, our higher education, and our industry? And along the way, hopefully, we grow a few entrepreneurs because, you know, that's the goal for me.
So why are the businesses not more aggressive in letting people know that they're here and doing the outreach that apparently you're not doing with them?
I think they are. They're plugging in. It's just, you know, creating a hub or a network or a pipeline, working with economic development, workforce investment boards, business acceleration, industry, and education takes a bit of coordination to get all those folks in the same room and communicating effectively so that, you know, your industry people aren't being approached by 15, 20 different people a year saying, hey, can you come speak at my thing? Let's coordinate that a little bit better. Let's create a hub where they can plug in and we become much more efficient at this. And I think the whole Valley would be shocked at how many assets we have here that we could put to use. The other thing, which I know you ask about disadvantages, but I'm going to give you one more advantage.
You like to go back to the advantages, right?
A recent Kauffman Foundation study found that that Medford, Oregon was number 16 out of 280.
180? Yeah, 180.
See, you're the stats guy. So let's just let Mark do the stats talk.
Hyper-analytical. That's me, yeah.
For zero-wage businesses, though, for startups. So there's only three that made the map in all – three regions that made the map in all of Oregon, and that was Portland, Bend, and Medford for zero-wage startup businesses. So that's a very impressive stat to go off of. Oregon now is the number one emigrated to – state in the union, so there's an advantage. People are coming here. Let's give them opportunities to thrive.
And
here.
Jeff, one other stat, real quick, while we're on stats, on that list of the top 179, where we slipped 102 places, 160 job growth, 166 wage growth, we're number 12 for our 5-year high tech GDP growth. So it's not smoke and mirrors and wishful thinking. It's actually happening here right now. It's a strength we could take advantage of if we triangulate it properly.
Okay, so there are two issues that are points of information here for the public, which is why you're here today. Number one is, if I'm a worker, where am I going to find out about the things I need to do to get ready for the kinds of jobs that are going to come? And number two, is there a single point of contact? Because when I look just at your list of titles, Mark Von Holly, I mean, you're with Sustainable Valley, you're with So Ready, you're with Sustainable Solutions Group, which we haven't even talked about yet, and R.A. Murphy Construction Company, trying to build the Rogue Valley Technology Park. Where does a company go if they're trying to get some help? Where do they go first? Is there a single point? It sounds like since you're, Heather, located with the So Ready people, it's easy enough for somebody to just amble into that office and go.
Yeah, I'll describe that situation a little bit because we're actually being looked at from the state of Oregon and even other states as a model for how to be collaborative. So Ron Fox of So Ready calls our collaborative office the Southern Oregon Economy Team. And housed in that office is So Ready, Sustainable Valley, the Governor's Regional Solutions Team, the Travel Oregon folks, and the Job Council. So I would say if you're an employee looking for work, I would plug in with the Job Council because that's their job. So there's the one-stop center right across from the Higher Education Center. They are very plugged in. They're at the forefront of what's called a rogue workforce partnership, an investment board for workforce, sector strategies. I would say that they're a great place to plug in. They're very plugged into the rest of the community. If you're a company, your first stop should be So Ready. And they can plug you in everywhere else. I mean, So Ready is the region's, the two-county region's economic development initiative. So they can plug you into the Small Business Development Center if you don't even have a business plan. The Small Business Development Center would plug you into Sustainable Valley when you get a little bit farther along. And then you might go back to So Ready again when you get ready for a loan or for an angel conference competition. So what really is, there's an ecosystem, and we can all plug each other in at the right place. But the first place to go, I would say, for a new company is probably So Ready.
And everybody's on the same page, though, in that whole chain of stuff. If you end up like at square three, they'll know where square one is and send you back there?
Yes. I would argue that is very true.
So let's talk about the Rogue Valley Technology Park in a little more depth. So 80 acres of land.
80 acres. It's state certified. It's one of the first sites in the state. It was, back about 10 years ago, that was. I'm not sure who initiated this, but they decided that they were going to look at certain sites that were in the communities that weren't realized their greater potential, and basically clear away all of the obstacles that would otherwise slow down the development. And so I have a binder that the Burles, Kurt and Mike Burl, invested to get that site shovel ready, and there's probably, it's probably 3 inches thick. I mean, from environmental issues and archaeological issues, everything that you would worry about as an obstacle for development has already been cleared in partnership with the state. So they didn't know it expired in 2 years. I had to get it recertified during our due diligence period over the winter when we were purchasing it. But there's 80 acres there. It's 13 lots. It could ultimately wind up being 20, or it could be one. It backs up against the Denman Wildlife Area, which will never be developed, with unobstructed, beautiful views of the Table Rocks and Mount McLaughlin. It's just an absolute diamond in the rough that nobody's been able to do anything with for 70 years.
Other industrial land not very far away. Jeannie in Medford had called and wanted to know what's going to happen with the Boise Cascade land.
Boise Cascade is still very much in operation. Matter of fact, they've probably got 30 positions right now that they're unable to fill. A generation ago, the sons followed the dads into the mill, but we've lost a whole generation of that workforce. And so Boise Cascade is still going strong. They're smaller and scaled back like the other timber operations have in the valley, but they're still going strong. So their lands right now are still being used by them primarily. They do have a little bit available.
All right. So to get 80 acres occupied eventually at the Rogue Valley Technology Park, and again, it's your company that owns the land, R.A. Murphy Construction.
Uh-huh.
And you're working through the agencies that are trying to bring the business to the land.
Right.
Where do you go? What's the outreach? What are the avenues of approach?
I appreciate that question, Jeff. What I did is I looked around the country for best-in-class modeling, same as we did when we started Sustainable Valley Technology Group. And I found a community similar in size to ours that brought in 75 to 80 businesses out of Southern California. So I'm looking at it saying, why don't we reverse engineer what they did, lay that over the valley, and in particular look at our top 5 high-tech sectors as a good place to start. And so that's my intention. As challenging as conditions are in Oregon, I think too many of us drank the Kool-Aid and said, oh, the taxation's horrible. Business climate's horrible. Really? Okay. For overall rankings in the United States, Oregon is number 12. With one being good, Oregon's number 12. California for business taxation is number 47. For overall business rankings, Oregon's number 17. California's number 48. So as challenging as things are here, they're far more challenging in California. There's a steady stream of businesses outwardly migrating from there. And those communities that take economic development serious and make the right investment, strategic investment to get their attention and say, hey, Jeff, on your way out of California, can we talk to you about Southern Oregon, the advantages of Southern Oregon? A certain percentage of those businesses are going to say, well, yeah, what do you guys have to offer? And we're only looking for those businesses that will fit in the fabric of what we're talking about here, that will create the family wage jobs, stop the brain drain, and create a stronger economic multiplier that will benefit all the other businesses in our community.
What are the regulatory obstacles, though, beyond things like taxation? I mean, you talked about the restrictive land use in Oregon, but that's why you have a technology park mm-hmm. here. Is you're saying, hey, look, we took care of all that stuff already. You can mm-hmm. locate here. What other sorts of regulatory things would companies be going, how do I fit within this?
I think we drink too much of our own Kool-Aid with the self-fulfilled prophecy of self-imposed mm-hmm. limitations, and that being one of the issues, the regulatory issues. We live in a bowl. We're surrounded by these beautiful mountains. So we've got significant airshed restrictions that a lot of other communities don't have. We can't bring in business that's going to cause atmospheric emissions. And I think everybody is okay with that because we all like breathing clean air, right? So clean tech is a perfect fit. So I don't think that there's significant regulatory obstacles that aren't the trend in every other state, California included.
All right, but now consider the overall environment, and we expand outside the Rogue Valley boundaries, outside of Oregon's boundaries, and you have other states that are clearly making big pitches to people. I mean, we just turned about
Texas.
We had Texas, and particular GM shutting a plant
in California.
Opening one in Texas. What did I read? Oh, yeah, General Motors. No, General Electric, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Building locomotives in Texas instead of in Pennsylvania because one is a high-wage union state, and then there's Texas.
Yeah, we're never going to attract any of those big companies, nor do we want to. We're talking about, I'm actually looking for privately held companies, not the big corporate entities, because I think they'll fit better in the fabric of what we're talking about here. And there's a certain percentage of them that are leaving, and if we get their attention, all we need is a very small percentage of that small percentage to come here and start to populate our industrial land.
But then when you talk about things like incentives, and I'll tell you something, Bruce Laird, who was on the Sustainable Valley Technology Group board when he was working years ago for what's become Business Oregon.
Correct. Great guy.
He said something that still rings in my head 25 years later, which was you don't lead with incentives.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But in a world where places like Texas are going to lay out incentives and tax breaks, et cetera, not just Texas, we not pick on just them, how do you get all the stars aligned for somebody to grow here when they're looking for stuff like that.
I could talk about the tech park real quick. I'm sorry, Heather, because I've got a real-world project right now. So it speaks to it, very fluid. I've got a project right now potentially to have 300 employees, and it's about a $12 million project. I've been able to line up about $3 million worth of incentives. I'm not a guy that's a big fan of incentives, but the reality is that's the hand we're dealt. Those things are available. And so $3 million on a $12 million project is a nice incentive to help attract a company to the region and to that site.
But do you let incentives sunset? Do they go away after a while and then they begin paying their full taxes and their full land use fees, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, I would say yes. The downside of that is that some of these big companies that come in, as soon as their incentives go away, so do they. So that's,
but we haven't experienced that. That's a theory. We haven't experienced
that.
With the enterprise zone, they have no taxes on their capital improvements for a period of time, but that's based on them providing jobs that are 150% of our median wage. Mm-hmm. And so it's like 7 years they have no taxes. But after that, they're going to stay here and they're going to keep paying the taxes.
So this is where our geographic region and relationships come, because at the end of the day, these are people. Yep. They're people that either want to live here or they don't. So creating the collaborative network of supply chains and relationships why starting a bit earlier. This is why, the iGrant model and bringing companies in that are earlier stages, that are maybe still working out of university fabs in the Bay Area or in Portland, getting them to get their own place and establish here, all of a sudden, they get a chance to see the beauty of the Rogue Valley. They get a chance to build relationships here throughout the state, and that's what's going to keep them here ultimately as they grow.
Is there any self-regulation built into the process of trying to attract and retain? Because it's not really your job. It's the job of people like city planners to make sure that things don't grow too fast. And all of a sudden, you've maxed out traffic on Highway 62 again, or any of those things. So, is there any mechanisms built into the whole attract and retain process to try to make sure that the growth is steady? Or is it, hey, if they could all be here tomorrow, we'd take them all tomorrow?
I think that's a good problem to have if we had to start regulating how many companies were coming here and growing. As soon as they have to start telling us, slow down, that'd be great. I think we haven't, experienced that at all yet, but...
So then the opposite end of things, though. I mean, what measurements are you taking to indicate that you're on target to where you'd want to be? I mean, have you set some real metrics for we want to have X number of jobs in by this year, that sort of thing?
On a personal level, I believe I'm going to have commitments in hand for the tech park, mm-hmm. again, sitting vacant for 70 years this year. And my personal goal is to have all the commitments in hand within the next 3 years. That's pretty ambitious. Again, it's been sitting there vacant for seven decades.
All the commitments. So all 80
that's,
acres
that's
spoken
my,
for within
my
3 years.
Right.
So 2017?
Right. Yeah, and then I'm hoping that rising tide of prosperity will kind of sweep throughout the valley and it'll change our circumstance and won't have so many people dependent upon entitlements as we do right now.
All right. We will talk to you again down the road and see how things are going along that progress report. Mark Von Holly is with R.A. Murphy Construction Sustainable Solutions Group. He's a board member at Sustainable Valley Technology Group and the So Ready Board, co-founder at Sustainable Valley. Heather Stafford, the executive director at Sustainable Valley Technology Group. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
That'll do it for today's exchange. If you'd like to find out more about the program and subjects and suggest a guest, go to jeffexchange.org. You can also find show topics and recordings on our Facebook page. Same links available on Twitter. If you're listening in the morning, the takeaway is next. If you're listening in the evening, we're followed by news from the BBC. Tomorrow, Thursday, on the exchange, we'll talk about redwood tree poaching. An arrest has just been made. We'll talk about the National Climate Report with a regional perspective. And then at 9 o'clock, we'll talk to the author of The Big Tiny about living large in small houses. That's all tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange. Our producer and today's engineer, Charlotte Duren. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Please talk to us again tomorrow on another edition of the Jefferson Exchange, and have a great day.